Shoranandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yasodanandana Vraja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Dara Yasodanandana Vraja Janarandana Yasodanandana Vraja Janarandana Yasodanandana Vraja Janarandana Jamunatira Vanachari Jamunatira Vanachari Jayora Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada from Humsa, Paribhajaka, Acharya, Asto, Tadas, Shishimad. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Vishnu Prabhupada Hamsa Paribhajaka Acharya Asto Tadasat Shishiman Bhakti Vedanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananakoti Rajdharana Kijai. Amacharya Shiladiras Thakura Kijai. Praying Sakahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shiad Deitogaradhara Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. Shirada Krishna Gogopina Shama Kundrada Kund Hiri Govardhan Kijai. Shumadavandam Kijai. Mayapur Navadvitam Kijai. Ganga Mayi Kijai. Jamuna Mayi Kijai. Tulsa Devi Kijai. Bhakta Devi Kijai. Srinam Sankirtan Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. Go Premanandi Yari 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 Bo. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga. Stita Di Muni, where are you? Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayet Nasta Prayeshwabhadrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Uttama Sloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Krishne Svadamo Bhagate Dharma Gyana Divisaha Kalau Nasta Jasham Mesha Paranarko Dunoditaha Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samitam Uttama Sloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Rishi Nishaya Sai Lokasya Dannam Swastayanam Mahat. The Srimad Bhagavatam is our only means of conquest. It's arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision during the dense darkness in the age of Kali
shall get light from this Purana.
Thanks for being there last night, sir.
That's the thing. And then I go over to Neil's house and we hang out. I had a study this morning.
We're dying to hear. Our ears are open.
I got shy. I had a panic attack. Because the whole verse is about shyness, right?
Hey, Krishna.
Radhavi Shankar Bhai, it's all about it. Music lives, it's a party. Being up, out of the room, we got everything going on.
So, did you guys already chant the stuff?
Did you do that?
He said,
yes.
Oh, cool.
Did you
say
the
bus?
Oh, yeah, I guess. That's part of the problem.
Yeah,
so
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Oh, just do that? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, the Sanskrit, huh?
It's really easy stuff.
Okay, Mridanga. Oh, yeah, I got to do the two verses. Okay. So, we'll just do this Mridanga verse. Mridanga Shankar Bhairascha.
Mridanga Shankar Bhairascha.
Bina Panava Gomukha.
Bina Panava Gomukha.
Dun Puri Anaka Gantaja
Dunduri Anaka Gantaja
Nader Dundu Bayas Tata
Nader Dundu Bayas Tata.
Should I do it again?
We did that. Vedanga Shanka Virascha
Vedanga Shanka Virascha
Thank you.
And Vina, string band. Yes, that's like guitars. Yeah. Well, there's a string instrument. Panava, a kind of flute. Gomukha,
another flute.
Danduri,
another drum.
Anaka,
kettle.
Gunta, cowbell. Bell.
Morkava.
Adya.
Others.
They do.
Sounding.
Dundubaya.
Other different types of drums.
Tata.
At the time.
While the Lord was departing from the palace of Hastinapur, different types of drums like the mridanga, the gola, nagra, danduri, dundubi, and flutes of different types, the veena, gomukha, and berry, all sounded together to show him honor. So, And the next verse is the one here. I'll just read the English, or should I butcher the Sanskrit? Just the English. All right. Should I do some Sanskrit? It's good to practice. I don't think anybody can understand it or understand Sanskrit, but Prasada Guru Naro Divishaya Varishu Musakai Krishna Prima Vidasana. Okay, out of loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shyness is a particular, extra natural, supernatural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect of the opposite sex. This custom is observed even during the days of the Mahabharata, more than 5,000 years ago. It is only the less intelligent persons, not well versed in the history of the world, who say that observance of separation of female from male is an introduction to the Muhammadan period in India. This incident from the Mahabharata proves definitively that the ladies of the palace observe strict parda, restricted association with men, and instead of coming down to the open air where Lord Krishna and the others were assembled, the ladies of the palace went up to the top of the palace and from there paid their respects to Lord Krishna by showers of flowers. It is definitely stated here that the ladies were smiling there on the top of the palace, checked by shyness. This shyness is a gift of the nature of the fair sex and enhances their beauty and prestige, even if they are of a less important family or even if they are less attractive. We are practical. We have practical experience of this fact. The Supreme Moment commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. Human civilization, as conceived by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion because actually the body is made of earth, water, fire, air, etc. But because there is the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. No one is attracted by an earthen doll, even if it is the most perfectly prepared to attract the attention of others. The dead body has no beauty because no one will accept the dead body of a so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion is that the spirit's spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. Vedic wisdom, therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows us very restricted mixing of women and men. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire and the man is considered to be butter. The butter must melt in association with fire. Therefore, they may be brought together only when it is necessary, like to make ghee, I guess. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift and it must be utilized. Okay, translation again. Out of loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the coos get up on the top of the palace, smiling with affection and shyness, they shout flowers in the Lord. So I didn't feel qualified to speak on this verse, right? Because I don't live this stuff in this lifetime. I just watch it. But so I asked Sukadev to give the verse, you know, in the prasadam line. But she said she was too shy. So what could I do? So fools rush in where angels fear to tread, and here I go. All right, so some of the things that attracted my attention is a lot that can be spoken about this, and to me it's very theoretical and probably influenced by my own conditioning. But I have heard a few Bhagavatam classes, so hopefully some of that's rubbed off here. But one thing that did attract my attention is this is really focusing on the ladies of the royal ladies of the palace. This, you know, it's really focusing there. I mean, and Prabhupada repeats this. I noticed this. Can't take, what's the deal with the mask here? Because I'm fogging up. Prabhupada repeats this like three times, the royal ladies of the palace. So within a Vedic context, that might have something to do with how these principles applied as far as the description in this verse. I'm not saying that the quality of shyness, whatever, is not a universal quality. And as I have some verses here, it doesn't just apply to the women. It is focusing on the pastimes of these women of the royal order. Another thought that came to me is even in modern society, it's not that Melania Trump comes down, you know, to every street festival. Not that this would be any street festival, but, you know, this would be aristocratic ladies, aristocratic women, and so there's that principle that they would go to they would observe from the balcony, if you will. But there was plenty of women sweeping the streets as well. But then Prabhupada also uses that example many times in his purports about he had some experience. I guess he was in a room with some men, and in India particularly. If you're a cleaning lady, as we call it, doing some cleaning service, it's not considered particularly a prestigious position. And then, in particular, if you have a bunch of, you know, guys in the room and this woman's cleaning, like a maid servant, she wasn't going to go in there, you know, and just like, hey, I'm here to entertain you while I clean, you know. And she just, you know, they backed off. They weren't going. I mean, I don't know the whole situation here, but she was not, you know. So, you know, there was the potency there that was respected, that she wasn't going to go in there and entertain him while she's cleaning, if you will, in some subtle way, I suppose. I'm not saying that's the entire pastime here that as experienced originally, but, you know, we see these things going on, you know, human nature being what it is. And, you know, it's a general principle, you know, if, you know, I mean, you know, guys sometimes act in certain ways, and you know, if a woman doesn't feel comfortable in that company, I mean, you know, discretion's the better part of valor. But I don't think there was any that wasn't the situation here with this sweeper woman cleaning the house or the room or wherever that Prabhupada witnessed, because you know, the Prabhupada would, I would assume, be associated with respectable people. But still, the woman felt some reserve there, some shyness to be working and having a bunch of men watching her. She just wanted to get the job done. And you know, it's just natural, men, women, you know, sometimes there's some energy flowing there on a subtle platform in our conditioned state, and she just didn't want to have any part of it. Just want to get the job done, go home, get her paycheck, I'm done with you guys, whatever the deal was. But in a more serious way, Prabhupada did use this example a number of times, how, you know, this woman has no, this particular individual who happened to be a woman who was cleaning this house, you know, didn't really have a plethora of wealth or social status or the leverage of the Purusha agenda, if you will, but she commanded their respect, and they gave her the space that she demanded or required or felt most comfortable. Or maybe they just needed the house cleaned, I don't know. But it worked. So, but in a serious way, it's an example of this quality has a certain potency. And there's a few examples in Vedic literature of this to the extreme. I mean, that was an everyday example in Prabhupada's life that he used quite frequently. I wasn't able to look these things up, but they're well known. I mean, Shakuntala, I remember the story of Shakuntala. I once wrote a story version of this for a project for Urmila that only went so far again. But so I got familiar with the story. I was trying to write it as a kid's story. But yeah, young couple, and I, you know, it was years ago I wrote that, you know, did that. But I guess the husband was cursed something. He died, you know, and it was untimely. I'm butchering the story, but I think I'm going to get the gist of it, God willing. And Yamaraj came, took him away, something, correct me. But basically, Shakuntala was the young, they were very much, you know, committed to each other, and she was very... Savitri, who's Shakuntala then, just so I get this right? Huh? Okay, Savitri, thank you. See, corrected by... You weren't very shy when you said that. I didn't like the way you looked at me. But, yeah, watch that. No, I just tease it. She's all shy. Oh my God. Oh my God. So, I better leave now. Savitri, thank you. So, I mean, she, due to her loyalty, her chastity, her commitment, her love, made the Lord of Death that stand down. I mean, that's the gist of the story, is that not right? I got it, I hope. So, there's a power there. And speaking of, okay, now how about women in the modern age here? Remember we met Chrissy Hine? Right, Madame T showed her how to put on a sari at the Waldorf. This is before you were around. So, sorry you weren't there. But I'll tell, anyway, so we met her. She's like this big rock and roll celebrity, one of the pioneers of rock, you know, women, you know. So it's not exactly your pious Hindu women path, career path here. She's up on a stage. Some of the songs aren't particularly in the mode of goodness, perhaps. Someone can criticize, though some of them have some philosophical imports. Anyway, we met her. She had a very devotional quality to her that we, in particular, picked up listening. Anyways, without getting myself... We met her a number of times. She's a devotee, very in her heart, feels very committed. First time we saw her, she had a Bhagavad Gita. We had no idea who this woman was. She met us, other devotees came rushing to us, showed us her Bhagavad Gita. It was dog-eared. But at any rate, so we met her, she was a devotee. Last person you'd think would be a devotee, what to speak of. Anyway, so a few years later, I was shopping with my kid and her mother. You know, at the time, we were married, but to her mother, which is good, that's what I get. But they were shopping for clothes. Oh my God, talk about gender conditioning. There's nothing more painful for me to shop for clothes. But I can go to Home Depot and won't look at the tools all day long. You know, but so I don't know if that has anything to do with this verse, but I tell you, there might be something to gender conditioning. Anyway, so they were shopping. I couldn't do. I was killing time in some store looking at the magazines or something. And there was a Chrissy Hynde something on a rock. Anyways, this woman who's not the, you know, you wouldn't think of as someone who's a chaste Vedic woman. She was talking. It was a, you know, this is like, I was like, whoa, this is like the last person. Anyway, she was. I'll get to the point. She's a very blunt woman. Person. She says, you know, there was a power. I was trying to find this quote on the internet, couldn't find it, but I swear I read this in the magazine. You know, there's a power to chastity, there's a shyness, there's a chastity, it's the power of a woman's and her chastity and her shyness. So here's a personality, a worldly personality. I mean, she hangs out with George, you know, when he was still here. I mean, that she's royalty rock and roll. Don't think of her as a Vedic princess, chaste Vedic princess, but she could appreciate, and she's a devotee. I mean, definitely, without getting to, you know, talking like that in public, in print, that there is a power to this. There is a power to this that's meant to be engaged, that can be engaged for the benefit of all, for a benefit of all. I mean, you know, we aren't, you know, if we find ourselves in our present conditioning, and we're not the possessor of these forms, nor are they essential to who we actually are. But they do have an energy about them, and, so how to get the most out of it? How to get the most out of it for, you know, in a win-win situation for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. So this is a tactic, or this is a tool in the tool chest. I mean, if you're a guy, a tool in the tool chest. Or if you're a condition, if you identify with maybe a sari in the closet or something. Whatever. It's something you can engage according, you know, you with discretion, with intelligence. If you're Brahminically oriented, you engage intelligence in your application. The Brahmins understand time and place, hopefully, through realization, how to apply these things in a practical, beneficial way. And that's why they lead society, because they know how these things are applied in a way that works, and everybody benefits. So people look up to that. We looked up to Prabhupada. I mean, I wasn't there physically. I got the books. He was here. But people could see, Prabhupada didn't have any money when he came here, didn't have any social standing, he was a senior man, a scholar, but it wasn't like he was networking and knew people and had connections, you know, that sort of thing. But he had his realization, he had his relationship with Krishna, and people felt that substance, that this was real, this wasn't just jibber-jabber intellectual entertainment, something to keep the mind engaged. This was a real, something experiential, because this person was experiencing and sharing that experience. And Prabhupada also knew how to apply it. You know, he knew how to apply it. Talk about a non-Vedic situation. I mean, he came here, he wasn't fazed at all by it. And if one thing, the early devotees were very impressed by that, that all these crazy situations are happening, even within a Western context, on 26th Second Avenue in San Francisco, and didn't faze Prabhupada, he just dealt with it. And all these young, wow, this fellow's, he's there. He's all there. So, you know, he wasn't born in this culture. You know, and even the Westerners, I was a little kid in the 60s. You know, so all the older, you know, the brothers and sisters of my, the older brothers and sisters of my friends were doing all that crazy stuff. But I was a baby, so I just watched it through them vicariously. So I was still home, listening to all the adults talk about it. And they thought they were all nuts, out of their minds, you know? So, I mean, so they're just standard Westerns, you know, they thought this stuff was crazy. And here's Prabhupada, you know, coming from Vrindavan, didn't faze him at all. He knew how to engage, how to connect these people. So that's Brahminical Tejas. That's leadership. That's Brahminical leadership. All right, so he knew how to apply these things, or, you know, something to, you know, so again, time and place. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, Dharmaraj, it's not like, you know, you get 10 sound bites and this is it, we got it. This is what we do. I mean, Yudhishthira Maharaj is Dharmaraj. He's, I guess, the king of Dharma, right? So he's the authority on what is righteous, And yet you have so many examples of him going to the sages, the sadhus, asking for advice. So that's part of being righteous. It's not like you just go around, I know, I'm telling you. I mean, maybe there's a time and place for everything, but at least in this context, here's Dharmaraj humbly going and constantly getting the advice of the sadhus and sages how to apply, how to do these things. So I guess the point to that is there's a place for humility, there's always more to learn, and we're here to help. We're here to help these people. We're not here to, like, you know, I mean, look, we're all, this is just one point of view here. We're trying to help these people. We're trying to, in the process, help ourselves. And please Krishna, and through that process, please Krishna, and that's really what drives it. Anyway, before we get into some of the shyness stuff about the late, you know, as the social customs go, speaking of kings and helping, Dharmaraj and all this stuff, and the royal lady. So we're talking here about the ladies of the palace, the royal ladies of the cruise on top of the palace, and you know them being shy up here. But it's not just the women. The men are supposed to be shy too, believe it or not, at least in certain contexts here. Well, actually, you're just supposed to be a devotee. You know what I mean? Don't worry about this stuff, because Kukja didn't, and she did fine. And I got some verses from her. Here's Prithu Maharaj. He's a king, most of the greatest of kings. He's an exemplar. So here's, what's this? Fourth canto, 22nd chapter, 62nd verse. Here's something about. So in his personal behavior, Prithu Maharaj exhibited all good qualities. And in spiritual knowledge, he was exactly like Brihaspati. In self-control, he was like the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. As far as his devotional service was concerned, he was a great follower of devotees who were attached to cow protection. How do you like that? And the rendering of all service to the spiritual master and the Brahmins. He was perfect in his shyness and his gentle behavior. And when he engaged in some philanthropic activity, he worked as if he were working for his own personal self. Interesting. This is a royal king. He's got to go off and go take people's heads off in a second, you know? He's got to play ball. And yet here's this quality of shyness in this warrior, exemplar, a leader. So this is a quality of the self. This is the quality of, and it's applied as a character of a Vaishnava. And it's applied in certain, effectively in various situations. He can't be shy if he's like in the middle of the battlefield. Actually, Arjuna was a little reserved there, pulling back, and Krishna had to pump him up. So that may not be the most appropriate place to be a little shy. I didn't mean to cut your arm off. Did it hurt? Oh, here's a Band-Aid. I'm sorry. Oh, my God, I got to go see my therapist. I'll be right back. You know, so there's time and place. But here, you know, for a person, you know, anyways, you get the point. Here's something here. Although Prithu Maharaj was a householder and father of five children, he was still considered the most controlled. One who begets Christian conscious children for the benefit of humanity is actually a brahmachari. Someone who simply begets children like cats and dogs, not a proper father. So that has something to do with the butter and fire thing. He was Prithu Maharaj was also very humble, meek, and gentle, And whenever he performed any philanthropic work or wealthy activity for the general public, he would labor exactly as if he were attending to his own personal necessities. In other words, he felt, it was like his own, he was so empathetic to his citizens, to all living entities as a Vaishnava. It was like he identified with his own self. As if he was attending his own personal self. In other words, his philanthropic activities are not for the sake of show, but are performed out of personal feeling and commitment. All philanthropic activities should be shown that way. That should be formed. Interesting. Anyway, so shyness is a quality even the most powerful Kshatriyas, time and place. So focusing on this verse, it's how it applies here. Let me get back to that. Here's my paper. So the royal ladies, I guess Krishna is out there departing. There's a whole big party going on with the guitars or whatever, the veenas. It says here the stringed instruments and the drums. It's a real street party going on there. They're not down in the street, you know, doing the hoedown. They're up on the balcony or on the palace roof, you know. And they're feeling it, because I tell you, about a good 20-25% of this chapter is what they're feeling. So it's not like these women are just shy and okay, good for them. Let's move on. Because the, you know, a good part of this chapter is what they were discussing and what they were experiencing. You don't really see that a good section of this chapter is about their, through their experience, we get the idea of what the feeling, what the bhakti, the sentiment is watching Krishna depart. So you don't see that, they're not talking about anybody else at all, what they're experiencing, but really the focus is on these allegedly shy, well, these, they're whatever, these naturally shy, whatever they are, they're, you know, up there, on the val- up in the, they're watching separately. So they weren't missing out on anything, apparently. Actually, they're featured in this verse. What the experience is all about here in this chapter is through their discussions later in the chapter that we get the, that direct insight as far as the recitation of this pastime. So there's that. Then there's some talk about here about the Muhammadan period and this and that. I don't know the historiography of that in any detail. There was, as Prabhupada says, some principles of separation. It's not that everybody's freely mixing and just, you know, snorting meth and, you know, having a party and, you know, going to hell in a handbasket. Also, look, you know, even in evil Western culture, there's some sense of a separation, though less so now, perhaps than maybe 30, 40 years ago. And we can get into whole sociological analysis of that. But, you know, it's there is a sense, there was a sense prior to the Islamic influence, though I have heard that, the you know, because the Islamic culture also put a certain gloss on it as well that may not have been there prior. I don't know the whole historiography of that, but I think the main issue here is that obviously Prabhupada is, to me, responding to some sort of discussion that was active within his life experience. Maybe had something to do with the British, and I don't know, you know, analyzing the history and Hindu nationalists at the time of independence. There was some discussion that he was responding to, because as far as I'm aware, it's not a, I haven't come across it, but whatever the case may be, it was something that was worth commenting upon. And this, there's some, everything in moderation, that there's some social custom, some social etiquette that was, as we see in the Mahabharata here, that, okay, here it is. This incident from the Mahabharata period proves definitively that the ladies of the palace observe strict parta. So again, he's emphasizing ladies of the palace. So again, I don't know what all this means. But it's Prabhupada is using that language, ladies of the palace, at least within the context of this particular pastime. It appears it could have something to do with Kshatriya Dharma. But then Prabhupada broadens it that it's a quality of gender relationships in general. But specific, there's something specific here to the pastimes of ladies of the palace. Instead of coming out in the open air with Prila Krishna and other assembles, the ladies of the palace again, or on top of the palace, they pay their respects. That just reminds me, in Kshatriya Dharma, in the Western context, it was a little bit trickier for the women, because in one sense, and King Henry VIII and, you know, Elizabeth, you know, is his daughter. There was issues that the queen had to be beyond, actually Prabhupada says this also in a Vedic context, the queen had to be beyond doubt, because, you know, this is in royal Kshatriya, you know, Major League Baseball pastimes. Because if the queen, there's some doubt about the queen's chastity, and, you know, the king dies, and then some duke from, you know, down the block comes, hey, you know, the queen's kids, they ain't the king's, they're mine. You know, then suddenly there's a civil war of succession. This is why Henry VIII was particularly sensitive, in part, because there was a huge civil war, and his father actually won that civil war. There was contestations about who had the better argument for a succession to the crown of England. There was a civil war. Henry VIII's father won out. So within his generational experience, this was a particular sensitive. He was very sensitive that his kid, he was shooting for a guy. And part of the reason why he was shooting for a guy is because he wanted to be ironclad, that his lineage would be secure. It's not our pastime here, but just to emphasize that it was, in that sense, the queen's, you know, any doubt, it wasn't just that, boy, she's a randy little gal there. The issue was, could bring on a civil war. You know, could you know, it's just the practical logistics of it. If anybody else could claim fatherhood. She had to be beyond, you know, it was the king's child. You know, it had to be beyond doubt. So that's just practical logistics, a Darwinian biological fact that I studied this in school, right? Biology. On average, women tend to get pregnant more often than men. It seems to be a biological reality. So, you know, women are the ones going to get pregnant. It's part of the bliss. You know, the kid has to be, you know, within that Kshatriya culture. We have that prominent example in the West. And here's the grand irony of King Henry VIII. This is, he was so concerned about having his lineage secure. He wanted a son because then it'd be beyond doubt. You know, because a woman, generally, they're not considered as Kshatriya-like, even though, you know, so that's one. But the other problem is then they get married, and then their husband, suddenly this whole other lineage comes in. So so he was trying to get a son, trying to secure it that way. He wanted, you know, long story short, all this social intrigue, and it was very, you know, this pastime in the West context, Shakespeare, everybody, I guess, everybody, you know, it's a real drama in the Western context, but he's trying to get a son to secure his lineage, and what ended up happening is it was his daughter who became Queen Elizabeth. And as it turns out, Queen Elizabeth is considered probably the greatest monarch in British history. So how do you like that? And she really, is a bit of a bookmark for the beginning of the rise of the British, glorious British Empire. You know, that sort of outreach, culture too, Shakespeare and so forth during this period. And then another kind of little irony of history is, and then she's sort of bookended to some degree by Queen Victoria, you know, who's really the climax of the British Empire. And, you know, after that was World War I and World War II, and the Brits sort of had to take a back seat after that. So how do you like that? Irony, Krishna has a sense of humor, you could say. But actually, Queen Elizabeth was really, all right, I'm getting off track here, but it's kind of cool. Anyways, I'm going to butcher this, but I just read this. There was some battle. What was it, against the Spanish Armada, I think it was? But it was some major battle. And she had to get they really could, you know, in these great history turning events, potentially. So she had to get in front of her troops. And she says, this is a famous speech. And she got her all armored up, had her sword, this and that. And she says, you know, I can't fight like a guy or something. She was eloquent, but I have the heart of a warrior, and I have the heart of an Englishman, and you boys, you go get them, and I'm right there with you in spirit. And they kicked their ass. So she knew, she had that. She knew how to, is that appropriate?
No.
No? Okay. Anyway, so in that point, so probably being shy wasn't, so she was being shy not to defend her kingdom, okay? So you're going to do it that way. So different time and place. Anyway, so point is, some of this here has to do with Kshatriya culture in the sense that they talk about the Kshatriyas, and Prabhupada's repeating that time and again. There's different applications within Kshatriya culture. There's many, so maybe as a social custom, as a general rule, these things certainly apply, otherwise they wouldn't be discussed. I don't want to minimize that, but life is complicated, and there's all kinds of applications according to time and place. And we see within the same Vedic culture context, these texts, so many other examples. I mean, about Durga, she's in charge of the whole material energy. She happens to be a woman, and she's a warrior. You know, so time and place, time and place, time and place. So as devotees, we are applying these principles for our self-interest, our own benefit, but the benefit of everybody. And Prabhupada talks a little bit about that in the end here. But before I get to the end of the verse, he has some other points. The Sripa woman talked about that, checked by shyness. So again, also, here's another thought comes, you know, this is royal culture, a lot of motive passion in royal culture, checked by shyness. Perhaps that's an issue to take into consideration here as well. Anyways, but here's the real kicker here, I think, of this verse. Human civilization as conceived of by the sages of India. So, you know, again, I think it's worthwhile to see how Prabhupada actually, the language he uses to make his arguments. So he's not saying human civilization as you know, laid down by Moses in the Ten Commandments, and now it's conceived by the sages. Sages of India are alive. You know, how this civilization that's alive and dynamic, you know, it's conceived by the sages of India, is to help one free oneself. I mean, not that one is not the other, but it's interesting that he's using the person, the people who bring this to life, is the sages, the sadhus, and the guru is our. We have this personal connection to the guru, you know, a sadhu, who's a sadhu. So he's a very special sadhu in our personal lives. Anyways, human civilization is conceived by this, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. So that's really the point of all these social customs, is to help free oneself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion, because actually the body is made of earth, you know, but because there is association of the living spark with matter, that it appears beautiful. I've had some pet animals, right? And this is a horrible example. But I tell you, after a little while, and a living entity, a biological form, and the soul leaves, it don't take long, and that thing is not very very zombie-like quickly, you know? So without that spirit soul, there ain't too much there to work with. But to speak, it's not animate anymore. So whatever that beauty is that we're projecting, without that spirit soul, it ain't there quick. I had a pet animal, didn't know where it was, so we smelt it, and boy, it didn't look like the, you know, it happens quick. I guess that's the point. Because of the association of the living spark of matter, it appears beautiful. So no one's attracted by the earthen doll. The dead body has no beauty, because no one will accept the dead body of the so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion. So this is the point. Conclusion suggests that. This is the word Prabhupada's using. The conclusion is that the spirit spark is beautiful. And because the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. So in one sense, we are actually yearning for that original rasa, and that is on the spiritual platform. So that is where the happiness is. That is where the beauty is, fully. Everything else is but a reflection of that, driven, you know, to whatever degree there's attractiveness to material energies, because the spirit soul is there. And we're not yet ready and clear to engage unadulterated on the spiritual level, so some of it gets filtered through in a shadow reflection, and we still have an addiction to the reflection rather to the real thing. The conclusion is spirit spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one's attracted to the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom, again, it's interesting. Prabhupada uses the Vedic wisdom as opposed to this or that verse. Now, you know. Thus, you know, it's like a general principle within this culture. Therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. In other words, we want the real thing. You know, maybe Coca-Cola is not the real thing, but the principle that we want the real thing is there. We want authenticity. Forbids us to be attracted by false beauty, but because we are now in the darkness of ignorance. So this is within the context of Vedic civilization. Because we're in the darkness, Vedic civilization helps these people in the darkness of ignorance. We're trying to restrict this mixing, because we're kind of like reformed alcoholics here, and part of the conditional rasa is a reflection of the spiritual rasa, and if we become enamored too much by the conditional rasa, we're going to miss the real point. But because we're by nature pleasure-seeking entities, we're going to find... Look, the alcoholic finds some pleasure in his substance of choice, but it's being abused in a way that the pleasure is diminishing to the point where the problem is, then he destroys whatever semblance of a respectable life or constructive life that this person may have. So in a similar way, we're addicted to the reflection, and we have to, you know, pull back, have some time and place, some, you know, so on and so forth to help break the addiction, so we can experience the reality, the fullness, the pleasures that's there in the original context. So these principles are there to help us experience the real thing, And we're attracted to the reflection because by nature we want pleasure, but we're attracted, it's like a big change-up. You know, it's like, sure, you know, there's some value in $50, but if you're giving up $5 million to get the $50, it's like nuts. You know, it's, oh yeah, here, you have a bank account here, $5 million. I'll hang on to that for you. Here's $50, go buy yourself some candy. Don't worry about the bank account I'm taking here. You know, and then you run off, you know, with the guy's money or gal's money. So, you know, for a few little tidbits, we lose our opportunity to experience the fullness. So here we go. So some of this restricting is there. So they say, those people over there somewhere, they say that the woman is considered to be the fire and the man is considered to be the butter. So the butter can be melted, right? The fire and the butter. So, you know, here's a principle. So this, you know, especially young, when the youthful, you know, where they say youth is wasted on the young. So, you know, there's a potency in youth. There's a power to the feminine energy. There's a power to the masculine energy. So there's something here, you know, we're trying to help ourselves. We're trying to help each other. By helping each other, we help ourselves. So, you know, in what's the time? Oh, I got to wrap it up. So in material culture, everybody's interested in material and sense enjoyment. We would use our facilities to attract more sense gratification. So the principle here is we're trying to withdraw that from engaging in material sense gratification and trying to engage it in a way that is actually helpful to experience the real pleasure and not get lost in the shadows. So the butter must melt. So unless you're trying to make ghee, but then you make ghee, and it's like you can do so many things. But if you just want to burn a bunch of butter, and I remember Varuna speaking of, remember I think it was a few years ago, they were cooking in the kitchen and something blew up and there was flames coming out of anyway, so you don't want to do that, you know, that's combustible. We're trying to make, you know, the decor is not blow up the kitchen, you know. But anyways, it all worked out in the end, and he made a wonderful feast, but it was a little bit of drama, and it was a great example in class. So shyness, so in this case, in this context, shyness is meant to check the unrestricted mixing, and you know, so it can be engaged proactively for the benefit of all. It is a nature's gift and it must be utilized. So utilize it. Utility is the principle. It's not that, oh, I'm out of time, but you know, these things are principles to be engaged intelligently. Somebody's got to like figure it out and know how to practically apply it. So there's and then leaders, you know, I had so much stuff here. As the great men, great women do, then the others people. So if you know how to engage this productively in a way that actually works, it gets a good result. The rest of society says, oh, that's pretty cool. I think I'll try that. You know, but if we're like spouting platitudes and tripping over ourselves and everybody's frustrated, it may not be as attractive. So if we actually get to the heart of it, get to the heart of what these principles are about, how to apply them, how people can actually benefit from them, actually experience the pleasure of Krishna consciousness through their proper applicable application, then people will be attracted to that, just as in these early days of the movement, everybody was attracted to Prabhupada, because he had the stuff, he had the real thing. And he applied it in a way that these people could actually take benefit from. So these are all important principles. I don't know anything about it. Next life, I'll come back and give a class, and maybe I'll know more. Most likely. Anyway, onward and upward, and Hare Krishna, and in the next life, maybe we won't have any of these problems anymore, and so much for that topic. Alright, Manamati, what's this about? From your personal experience in this lifetime, having to deal with these issues. I'm going to embarrass you so you're so shy I won't say anything.
Thank you, Sri Mani Prabhu, for bringing out a lot of good points in your class. Couple of things that I really appreciated you bringing up about shyness in men. And actually, as far as I remember, that's one of the qualities that's described in the Nectar Devotion about Krishna being shy also, like you mentioned about Prithu Maharaj. And it made me think about and knowing you for so many years, actually, you're also a very shy person. And you mentioned that shyness is a Vaishnava quality, and so there you are. Shyness is a Vaishnava quality. And I said, that's humility, and that's kind of like goes along with that. It made me think of a video of Srila Prabhupada when he is being greeted in Los Angeles. I'd like everybody to watch that and watch it again if they have already watched it. And all the devotees are offering Srila Prabhupada flowers. And Prabhupada has his hands folded, and he has such a shy smile on his face the whole time as the devotees are welcoming him and offering him respects and, you know, offering him love. And he's accepting that. And I just love that video. And you see that shyness in Srila Prabhupada. And in a lot of places you see that shyness in Srila Prabhupada. And another point that I was thinking was about, you mentioned about Srila Prabhupada, how he was so expert. And you saw that, he saw that when he came to the West, that how he would call them boys and girls, and he saw that how the girls were just like their brothers. And so he engaged them according to their propensity, and so they also wanted to go out in Sankirtan, which Prabhupada noted that that may not be, somebody would not do that in India, the girls, you know. But he noted that they wanted to do that, and so he engaged them in their propensity, whether they were shy or not shy. Okay, this is it. So yes, you may go out. He gave them that blessings to do so. So I was appreciating those points that you mentioned in your class. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm off the hook. Yeah, I mean, yeah, these are qualities of the soul. Yeah, these are qualities of the self, really, and then they get filtered through in different social conditional contexts. So how to apply them effectively. But the, you know, Prithu Maharaj is a king. So, you know, anyways, these are qualities of the soul that are attractive, and that's the real thing. So how to effectively apply them, time and place, I guess. All right.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Your class was very nice. And I just wanted to reiterate, I really appreciated at the end when you said that we can't, what did you say? Spout platitudes and at the same time tripping over ourselves. And yeah, and I was thinking that I took that to mean that, yes, we need to not only speak the philosophy, but we have to apply it in our own lives and live it. And when we do that and we experience the happiness of doing that, then others will naturally be attracted, and then that there won't be any issue.
Yeah. On the other hand, there's always issues. But no, that points, you know. But I think it's like, you know, just like Prithu Maharaj, he was very humble, meek, and gentle whenever he performed philanthropic work. So he's a king, and you know, I'm building this, I'm doing opening the school, or whatever the heck he's doing, building the well. But here, our philanthropic work is giving these people these philosophies, giving these people this framework to enter into bhakti. So, you know, that's philanthropical, you know, preaching is philanthropic work. It's Brahminical philanthropic work. So this is, apparently this could be, he was very meek, humble, meek, and gentle. And whenever, you know, so there's something to that. There's something to that. Of course, there's also strong, you know, time and place. You know, it's not like, oh, now we're going to chuck all the other principles. Because, you know, all these cards are in the deck. And again, you know, as you said, it's by applying it to ourselves we get realization about how to apply it in real world, in our own heart. Very real world set of circumstances. And then we get the realization experience and, well, I can connect this person in their heart, what they might be going through, and how I could apply my experience to help them work through the issues in their heart as well. And then, you know, again, Prabhupada came here, didn't have a heck of a lot of experience, you know, hoedowing with the beatniks and the hippies, you know, in Vrindavan. But on the human level, he quickly picked up where these people were at and what they needed and what could help them move forward. He saw that they were open and receptive, and he knew how to fan that interest. Based on experience, on human experience. So there was a certain meekness and humbleness and gentleness there. He was a sadhu in India, even with no money. He could go see prime ministers, you know, and so on and so forth, statesmen, you know, he had like a PhD, you know, only better. So, but here he is, he's going to some, you know, the Bowery, you know, in the middle of winter. you know, hanging out with a bunch of drunks and worse, to find people who might be interested to experience as he was experiencing.
I don't want to come. I'm Dharma Dasa.
Assemble one on the right. This we have to pray for 1 minute. Just somebody touch. You have to go to maybe.
Request the devotee prayers. Oh, somebody needs a prayer?
Yeah, Trivikram.
Trivikram?
Trivikram. He fell off the ladder.
Oh.
But he's going to be in hospital. He's already in hospital. There will be surgery, like serious.
Really?
So we're going to just pray. Just chant one time together, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. You know, funny thing, I can say so many things about these prayers, but we should not take it lightly. Actually, some devotees even say in this community, this prayer that we prayed for that Mataji, she said, it's like a miracle. Even the doctor said, like, what happened? What did you do? What did you eat? So nothing in the temple they pray. See, probably is like very, very powerful. We don't take it lightly. Dharma Shastra says that man, the relationship becomes very attractive when man provide three things by example and practically doing it, also with the proper intention. So he gives three things, the affection, care, and protection. And the woman gives to the man two things and captures the heart. And one is shyness and chastity.
Yeah. Yeah, so engage these things. You know, again, I'm like the world-class failure in family life here, but I mean, it is an interesting topic. But you know, there's a gender dynamic there, obviously central to a family situation, and we find ourselves in our present conditioning. So how do we engage these energies to help our, you know, we obviously feel attractive, we got to, you know, and look, you know, as devotees, we love Krishna, and Krishna loves everybody. And because we devotees, we love Krishna, why shouldn't we love, because all the other entities are all parts and parcels of Krishna, they're dear to Krishna, we love everybody. So why shouldn't we have care for people who Krishna's actually sent us to interact with in a very personal, direct way. So, you know, it's like we love everybody except the people, you know, we actually have to deal with. I mean, that's kind of maybe requires a little bit of therapy there, a little bit of work. So, you know, Krishna sent us people to work with, and we can engage these things. It's like we're not enamored by society, friendship, and love. Like, that's the all in all. But we can, it's Krishna's energy, and we engaged it in a therapeutic way to benefit others and ourselves. So, yeah, you know, there's certain strengths, there's certain proclivities, there's a software package that seems to come with these things. Ultimately, it's the jiva, and this may resonate deeply. They may be aloof from it. We see so many different examples of people. It's not, you know, one size fits all. But nonetheless, you're driving a Corvette, let's say. I mean, it has certain features, and maybe you just drive it to the Walmart to pick up milk or something, or, you know, or maybe you go, you know, drag racing down 95 and make it to New York in 3 hours flat. So you could do that with a Corvette. You could do so many things with it. And it's still a Corvette. So we may have these yantras that have proclivities, but it's really the jiva that's engaging them. So what's the point there? So there may be certain proclivities of the Corvette or of the, you know, the Volkswagen or whatever, and we, you know, this is our car for the next 5 years until we get rid of the payment plan, and then we can trade it in or whatever the deal is. So how are we going to make the best use of this? We're going to maintain it. You know, we're going to do constructive things with it. I mean, if I wrap the Corvette around the tree, you know, it's like it's a big headache. Assuming I have a headache to have a headache after I wrap it around the tree, you know. Actually, the story is this guy buys a Maserati, $150,000, forgets to call his insurance company, drives it home, wraps around the tree, and it's not insured. So you don't want to do that. My point is, these things, you know, we're in these forms for a certain period of time. It's a reflection of past desire, issues, you know, whatever. It's perfect for us in our present form to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. We engage it.
There may be gender proclivities. We want to engage that in a way that's productive for ourselves, productive for the people we care about. And there's certain principles there, certain hints, if you want to put it in that way, where we can engage energies to help ourselves, to help, you know, it's nice when, you know, the family life thing is hitting on all eight cylinders. It's very productive, and it's a real foundational element of any culture. So, again, for me, this is theoretical. But, and I know there's people in the community and elsewhere who are very focused on this, you know, how to get those energies in the most productive way possible that actually facilitates the experience of Krishna consciousness. And that's a great service. But to speak of these kids, as it says here, just, you know, having pastimes willy-nilly and whoop, got a kid, you know, that's okay. Engage them in Krishna consciousness if you can. But if you actually proactively are trying to bring people to engage and to help others, I mean, there's a whole art, there's a whole science here. So, especially the second, third generation, there's more of a cultural support network now. There's a little bit of experience to bring to it, as opposed to just a bunch of platitudes in the early days, by comparison. So it's a great service. What is it? You know, there's a lot to explore there in a productive manner for making Krishna conscious a facilitating experience for the broader culture and society, but to speak of ourselves. Because gender stuff is a big, you know, anyways, I don't get it. I didn't get into too much trouble. I'll leave it there. I'm out of here. All right, so the women are too shy. Otherwise, they would have given the class. Someone has to do it. I'm just trying to help out here. Don't blame me. All right. Oh, you got another one? Oh, if anybody doesn't like the class, blame the women, right? No, oh, sorry.